moral inventory of ourselves. I will read the first paragraph on page 63, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Page 63. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup, which had caused our failure. Being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with? Ashton is going to go first.
Hi, my name is Ashton. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ashton.
Woo! This is a lot. Okay, so my sobriety date is March 20th, 2010. I have a sponsor. She knows she's my sponsor. I just moved back here, so I'm in between home groups, kind of like in between jobs, you like that. So yeah, and I sponsor other women, and I tell you all those things because those are the things that keep me sober today. And so talking about the four step, like we just read a lot. We just read a lot, and I think we like it kind of skipped something, yeah. But that's okay. So I kind of want to talk about the first paragraph first. It talks about this, like uses words like vigorous and vital and crucial. And like when the first time I read this, it didn't register to me. Like none of those words registered for me. And, you know, when I came into the rooms of AA, I was 22 years old. I was really more worried about having fun and how am I going to like function on a day-to-day basis? And like, am I going to be consigned to a life of bowling? I was worried about like, how am I going to have fun? I was not worried about vital, crucial, vigorous. I was not worried about those words at all. You know, I have a lot of yets in my story. And so it, for me, I was really identifying out as much as I possibly could. Because when you would sit in a meeting, you would be like, oh, well, you know, I was arrested X amount of times. And I'm like, well, I never did that. And finally, an old timer said yet to me. And I was like, oh. And so then I was like, okay, cool. So then I got this sponsor and I sat on my fourth step for like 6 months. I did my third step and I did not do this the way that the book talks about. I didn't. And I'm sure shit not going to sit up here and lie to you about my experience. And the reason being is because I am a firm believer that it takes what it takes, right? And somehow, I don't know how, 10 out of 10 do not recommend, I managed to stay sober that entire time. I can tell you that I was crazier sober than I was drunk because I was just hanging out in meetings for 6 months, not being vigorous and not being vital and not seeing this as vital. I was kind of just hanging out, having a good time until that good time wasn't a good time anymore. I mean, it kind of was, but it didn't feel good. I started to still feel that incomprehensible demoralization that we talk about. And so I did the third step prayer again, because it says, as soon as you do that, you're like diving right into this four step stuff. So I did it again. And I remember I was getting ready to deploy, and I was like, okay, how do I keep this as simple as I possibly can? And I probably started a four step like six times, just because I needed the organization to be perfect, because I apparently like it was going to be published. And that's my experience, right? And so what happened was I had a pressure, right? I work better under pressure, you know. If you wait till the last minute, it only takes a minute. That's how I operate my life to this day. So I'm getting ready to deploy, and I'm like, if I knew in my heart that if I did not do this four step, that I was going to drink. And I sat on my boyfriend's couch, who had like 7 years of sobriety, who totally 13 stepped me, but that's okay. rigorous honesty. And I sat on his couch in Huntington Beach, California, and I did not leave that couch until I was done. And when I tell you, I kept it as simple as like what is in this book, like this exactly. Like, I was as lazy could be. Here's my resentment. Resentful at mom for blah, blah, blah. It affected my personal relations. I was selfish. I was self-seeking. I was dishonest. I was afraid. And it was like so garbage. It was so garbage to me. I thought it was so garbage. This is what happened though. Like, going through all of this, I still somehow got some stuff out of it. And the process of just doing it, I will say, I didn't have to put my four step on my four step, because I sat on it for so long and I was resentful at my four step that I even had to do it. So that's a thing. But man, like, I just, this whole like vital and crucial, like, I don't know, because I did it eventually. And I'll get a chance to tell you more here in a second, but that was my like very beginning. Like, I did not take it seriously. I managed to stay sober somehow. 10 out of 10, do not recommend. And it was 100% when it says our liquor was but a symptom, man, I totally lived that. I totally lived that. And it just, I mean, for me, like this, the four step is it's an ongoing thing for me on a daily basis. So, and I will leave it at that for now.
Thanks, Ash. All right. I'm Morgan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Morgan.
Hello, everybody. I have a sobriety date. It's November 15th, 2013. I too have a sponsor that is aware that I am alive. This is my home group. And I do have the pleasure of working with another guy right now. I'm actually going to give him a 1-year chip tomorrow. First one that actually stuck around that long, you know. It's wild, isn't it? They usually get to this point and then leave, or they'll get through this point and get to the amends and then leave. So very grateful to see somebody else have an experience. It really is. It helps me immensely. I'll preface this with the very first time that I had attempted to do this. I can tell you that I definitely did not launch out on a course of vigorous action. I don't know how, for many years, I missed those two words. Launch means, you know, you're getting like shot out of a cannon to do something. That's how I think of it. And vigorous seems very intense to me, you know, like maybe I should be immediately doing this thing. I don't know how that went over my head, you know. And I guess I'm a lot like Ashton. So my story is, I ended up in AA at 20 years old, sitting in Virginia Beach jail, wondering how did it get this bad, 117 pounds soaking wet, looking in a metal mirror, not recognizing the person I saw. And it really actually soaked in that time. They put me in the suicide room because they thought I was going to have a seizure. That's what they call it, suicide room. Put you in a turtle suit, you know. Anybody ever had to deal with that knows. Yep, we got one. We got two hands up. I love it. Usually there is at least one when I tell that story. So So that's what I came to AA with, but I came here absolutely broken, you know, and I knew, and I had been around meetings a lot, would say they never worked. But I had tried going to a 12-step program, but never done 12 steps. So, you know, I never really tried doing anything. And I knew that the people in those meetings were happy, and I had no idea what happiness and contentment was, you know? So, but I have this brain that still thinks that I have a really, really good idea or a better idea, or I can do this differently and have the same results, you know? And I went on 3 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. The first time that I had written an inventory, I had written only a resentments inventory, no fear in sex, followed by, you know, telling it to my sponsor, left a bunch of stuff off of it, you know what I mean? Getting some very temporary relief. I had no clue what 6 and 7 were, you know, and I made some amends, and I coasted on doing the absolute bare minimum. And maybe I'd give you a ride to a meeting if it was on the way. I wouldn't raise my hand to sponsor people. Quite frankly, you probably wouldn't have wanted to be sponsored by me back then. And I found myself at 3 years sober, absolutely miserable. And mind you, in this time, I wasn't really praying. I wasn't trying to build a relationship with a higher power, none of that kind of stuff. And I found myself at 3 years sober, hating everybody around me, going to meetings occasionally, and just, you know, sitting in the back, mumbling under my breath, you know, that guy said the same thing every single day for the last 3 years. Why won't he shut up? You know, all of that kind of stuff. And it wasn't long, you know, I took a good 3 month hiatus, ended up here in Norfolk from Richmond. 3 month hiatus of going to AA, went on fish tour, went around the country for a while. And by the time I landed here, I was here with nobody that I knew. You know, I grew up at the beach, but I was here with nobody that I knew, and I was absolutely miserable, living in a shoebox, one bedroom apartment on Graydon Avenue, and wondering what I'm going to do. I absolutely wanted to die. That is how I felt. I felt worse than I did that day than I did when I was sitting in a jail cell in Virginia Beach Jail. And I just had this idea, maybe I'll walk over to this meeting. And that night, I don't really know what it was. Call it a God moment, call it a higher power, call it me actually taking the third step. But I decided to go to that meeting and actually commit to doing this stuff. And I got with a new sponsor here, and I actually started doing the work in AA. So it's hard for me to learn, you know, I get it. I somehow I've got a lot less tolerance for being miserable these days than I did back then. So we had to get down to causes and conditions. I do like the analogy that we skipped here about the business, but I'm not going to talk too much about that. So one thing that I really want to say here too, and it somehow went in one ear and out the other, like all of this work we do, and I wish that it could have been hammered into my head a little bit better. This inventory, really what it is we're trying to get rid of the things that are making us so angry and so burnt up, you know, all these things that we refeel over time, and all that stuff that's blocking us off from some power, you know, call it God, call it a higher power, call it whatever you want to call it. And that's really what all of these 12 steps do and get us to that power by the end. And that somehow went over my head for a very long time too. Because all of my other attempts in AA, I'm like, I've got to come here as a diehard atheist and think that I just have to immediately believe in. And I just want to hammer the idea. I know this is a fourth step thing, but it still kind of ties in, that all of this work is what really gets us to that point. You know, so if anybody in here is struggling with that at all, I just want to say, just do the work and you'll have an experience by the end. If I can, you can, I'll tell you that. And some people in this room, or at least one, knew me before I got sober. So, he knew how I was back then. So, you know, I, all of these things, you know, I never really noticed until I started putting this stuff down on paper, how burnt up I was about stuff and how deep some of these resentments really went into my life and carried with me for so many years that tied into the way that I reacted to situations in my day-to-day life. You know, I never really was able to see that until it was put down on paper. And I love the fact, I love that it says, from it stems all forms of spiritual deceit. You know, not only have we been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. And, you know, when I do, you know, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And that really seemed to be true for me. You know, if I do this work and try to continue to do this work to the best of my ability on a daily basis, I don't seem to get too burnt. And I seem to be a pretty content and happy person. And that's what I was, honestly, that's what I was looking for in the drink and all the other stuff that I was doing. You know, and I did it exactly how it has down right here. I'm resentful at, you know, and I just did a little, call it a 10 step if you want, with a few names recently, but one that always comes up, it tends to be the people that I am around all of the time. That's really what it is. It tends to be the people I'm around all the time. I'm resentful at my dad because he always thinks he's going to die, you know? And that's, I mean, it's funny, but it's sad, really. And, you know, because he inconveniences me, all that stuff. And then I see it and I'm like, I can't believe that I think these things, but it is actually real. And what does it affect? It affects, a lot of times, it affects my ambitions. You're getting in the way of me doing what I want to do. You know, there's that selfishness piece tying into just about every single thing. I really don't like people getting in my, and I tend to not be able to see that until I put it down on paper. Like, so I'm going to shut up now and we can keep being sorry.
All right. We're going to pick up on page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. We're going to switch over to page 66. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. Mm. Ashton.
Gosh. Whew. That last, like those last two sentences. So I told you about like the first four step I ever did. And so it took me 2 years to get all the way through the steps. So I went on that deployment and I was really freaking out because, you know, my sponsor wasn't able to go on deployment with me and I didn't know anybody on the ship that was in AA. And I felt like I was being ripped away from, you know, this awesome thing that I had found. And, you know, what happened was, is my sponsor said, well, why don't you pray about it? Why don't you pray and ask, you know, ask for another alcoholic to be on the ship with you? And holy crap, when you believe it, they have AA meetings on aircraft carriers. And when you believe it, there was other alcoholics on the ship. And I met a girl, she had 3 years sober at the time. And I was, let's see, probably about 8 or 9 months sober when we deployed. And, you know, I asked her to be my temporary sponsor on that deployment, and we did, 6 and 7 together on that deployment. And she was my Liberty buddy. And that was really cool. I celebrated my 1 year, off the coast of Japan, aiding, the Japanese when the Fukushima plant exploded, during that tsunami. So that was how I celebrated my 1 year, like ideally being of service. Right. So that was interesting. So I get back and, move to Washington State and, you know, kind of just hanging out, you know, another year of hanging out. And then I moved to Pensacola and I realized I'm walking out the back door and, I'm working at a bar and I'm also, you know, working, I'm an instructor and I'm also working at a bar, because I want extra money. And I realized, like, I'm not doing any of the things that I used to do. There was no young people. There was no, all the women were like judging me. Started to get all these resentments. And I met this woman. She got sober when she was 17. And I told her, I asked her to be my sponsor, never called her. And then I told her where my home group was. And one day she just showed up. And luckily I happened to be there. And she's like, oh, you know, just checking on you, make sure you're not a liar. And I was like, oh yeah, you know, and I started complaining, right? I started complaining about there's no young people's meetings. You know, this place sucks. This is the Bible Belt, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, create the fellowship you crave. And, she showed me how to do more thorough four step, in my opinion. Right. And we did a little bit of a deeper dive. And of course, you know, I got into a relationship, which to be honest, probably had no business being in, but it is what it is. That's how we learn. Right. And so she taught me how to go into this like a little bit more thorough. And I like to break it out because something that I always used to sit in meetings and listen to people when I was on my four step for as long as I was. I used to go to meetings and it would always be the four step and that would always be the topic. And then I would hear people talk about the four step and they would just read the crap out of the book. But I'm like, can you please explain it? Because I don't get it. And my sponsor would explain it and I would still like not get it because I think I was just choosing not to get it. But I never really did hear anybody like actually like explain like the way they went through. So this is how I like to preface this. I like to keep it simple now. I am going to say this. Everyone can do this, however, whatever works for you. That's my opinion. Out of the book, as long as that's like your basis, you can organize it however you want, work with your sponsor, do what you want to do. I'm happy to like dive deeper after if you want. So this is for me, like I was going to die. For me, to drink is to die. So if I don't get down to causes and conditions, like I'm cut off from the sunlight of the spirit. I am running around Pensacola like, F you, F this place. I thought all the women were judging me. I thought everybody was out to get me. I was in a relationship. You know, he was eating all the food in the refrigerator, right? This is where I'm at like the littlest things. And so I'm gonna read you of that particular resentment because it's one of my favorite ones. And so the cause, right? My boyfriend at the time, he eats everything in the fridge. It affects my, and for me, when I go through my affects my, I don't write down, pocketbook ambition. I don't just write the word anymore. My sponsor taught me, okay, let's talk a little bit about that. Let's dive a little deeper. And it's like, okay, what is affects my personal relations. Okay. What do you do? Well, affects my personal relations. Okay. What do you do? All right. So I make snide remarks about how there's nothing left in the fridge for me. I'm passive aggressive. You know, I tell all of our friends about his eating in like a joking way. I like make his lunches so he knows what he's allowed to eat. Dead ass. Okay. It affects my self-esteem. Okay. Self-esteem. I feel. Okay. I feel like he doesn't think of me when he eats all the last of something in the fridge. I feel annoyed by having to share my food with someone, right? And then I go into like sex relations, right? Ambitions. I want, right? Ambitions. I want him to leave food in the refrigerator for me. I want him to ask me before he eats something in the refrigerator, right? And so then I go into the next part. Okay. Where am I being selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and afraid? And I was taught selfish is the thought, self-seeking is the action. Okay. Selfish. I think I bought it. He doesn't think of me. You know, I think, you know, what do I do? Self-seeking. What's my action? I am hiding food. I hide certain things so he won't eat them. I make myself feel better by joking about it. Where am I being dishonest? I'm hiding food instead of just like communicating like, hey, can you not eat this? Cause I want to have this for lunch tomorrow. I don't know why that was a hard concept for me at the time, but it was. Where am I afraid? And this is what was like my favorite part about this, right? This is what happens to me when I do a fourth step. When I put pen to paper, something happens, it flows. Why? Because I said the third step prayer before I started doing it, right? I asked God to help me do this and to remove all this stuff so I can be of maximum service, right? For him and my fellows, right? So here I go. I'm afraid. I'm afraid of him getting fat because then I might not be attracted to him. And I'm afraid of sharing because that makes this relationship real. And I feel like I'm not just, and then I wrote dot, dot, dot. Wow. That last one was a direct result. That one wasn't even me. I remember doing this and I remember being like, holy smokes. It wasn't even me. I feel like I'm not deserving that right there. I feel like I'm not deserving. That's my cause and condition right there. That's that fear. And it makes me emotional because this happens to me all of the time. Whenever I put pen to paper, it's like the most beautiful thing. It's the best gift you can give yourself. And I still balk at it after 13 years. I still balk at it, right? And so my sponsor, I'm reading her all this and she looks across from me and she says, your word is vanity. It took everything I had not to come across that table and smack. Girl, if you don't get out my face, I'm going to have to put you on my four step. But she was right. I was making everything that he was doing about me. And I did not know that until I was able to put pen to paper. And so for me, really getting down to like the causes and conditions and diving a little bit deeper into, you know, these things, instead of just writing down my personal relation, it affects my personal relations. Okay, cool. Like we got it. But what's the next step? And for me, doing a four step this way really was able to open up the causes and conditions for me. So that way I can be connected to the sunlight of the spirit. Because after I wrote, you know, after I write a four step this way, it's like something happens, right? And not a lot of times I don't even have to do a full out fifth step because I see it and I feel it. And I still will because it's part of the process, right? But, you know, for me to drink is to die. And as soon as I start getting resentful and I don't put pen to paper, you will notice. You'll be like, dang, girl, like you're a little bit like bitchy all the time, very negative. You will notice a difference. You absolutely will. So I think that's what I got on that.
Thank you. Yeah, so where did we stop? I'm like, go ahead.
Wait,
no, second reading, whatever. Yeah. The second reading was.
Oh, I left off. Okay. What have I done?
I just want to see that. Sorry for taking that. Well, no, we chopped these up recently. It used to be broken up a lot more, so I swear why I'm getting a little off centered here. It's a lot to swallow. Yeah, so okay, yeah, okay, perfect. Sorry about that, y'all. So, you know, it's funny, like thinking back on that first really horrible inventory that I had written, with the first sponsor that took a crack at sponsoring, me up in Richmond. And, you know, really I had not done this correctly. And I don't know how. I couldn't see it on the paper, or he wasn't capable of showing me how to do it right. But I basically just lived in this resentment inventory. That's why I kind of wish that both of these were together, but there's so much, because I had never done any sort of fear and sex inventory. And the fact of the matter is, a lot of these resentments tie in with that fear. And for me, it was a lot of fear that I didn't know was fear. You know, I used to think that I was, you know, I'm not scared of anything. I'm not scared of dying, you know, like that's kind of how I lived my life. But in reality, I was scared of just about everything, you know? And, I seeing this all down on paper, you know, I that was the first time that I was able to really notice that all of these resentments were tied in with some sort of fear for me, fear that I'm not going to really get what I want out of the situation, scared that I'm going to end up alone, you know, or that people are going to do things the things to me that I did to them, kind of thing, you know. And basically I just lived in this resentment inventory. So really it was no wonder that I couldn't, it was hard for me to really have an experience that first time. When I was really beaten down enough to actually put pen to paper, a lot of this started to come to life for me. And, you know, and even today, I tend to be able to see this a lot better when it's happening, when I'm starting to get resentful towards people. Like I said, it happens to me every couple of years with the people around me on a daily basis. It tends to be, I tend to start getting resentful. And I'm grateful for this entire process, because I don't tend to fly off the handle. I'm good at pausing, but what I'm not good at doing is trying to connect with God afterwards. Mm. And I'm very good at pausing and then hating you, you know, and that is not a good place to be. So it is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads to only futility and unhappiness. You know, those are the things that I can look forward to if I decide to not just step. If I decide to not continually try my best to do this stuff, you know, I love that it says the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. Mm-hmm. You know, we're here. I know I'm here, and I'm constantly wanting to grow. And for me, growing is honestly screwing up a bunch of times and having an experience that gets me in a place to actually reconnect and do stuff. You know, for me lately, I've you know, off and on just felt kind of disconnected. I'm trying to really get back into some sort of 10th and 11th step stuff, because for a long time I've kind of strayed away from that. I'm not gonna lie, I'm not gonna sit here and say that I'm perfect. I'm really grateful, you know, that I don't have to live in resentment today, because that's really what will shut me off from that power. I think that's all I got on that.
Okay. We're going to continue on page 66. We turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done. We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Ashton.
Whew. Okay. So when I did my first four step, you know, when I finished everything and I sat down with my sponsor, we were on a beach in La Jolla, California, and it was beautiful. It was like your stereotypical like four step, like something you would see in a movie. The sun was setting and we were just having a great conversation. And, you know, like I was reading my four step and she was like listening, like, you know, it kind of makes me laugh. I was really struggling with my mom. I was really struggling with, like, she was supposed to be the mom, you know, she was supposed to be the mom, not me. And I just struggled and struggled. And, you know, I think my favorite part about doing this stuff with someone else who's done it before is you get an outsider's perspective who gets it. And she, you know, my mom struggles with, you know, mental health. And she was diagnosed bipolar when I was 12. And that's the story that I'm in bondage to, right? Like that story right there. Whenever you hear me share my full story, I always start with that, right? And I always say, like, this is the story that I'm in bondage to. And over time, that's shifted and fluctuated through this maintenance and growth. And she sat across from me and she said, can you split your mom and her disease and know that and be resentful at the disease and split the two? And I had never thought about it like that before, to be able to look at her as a sick person and to know that maybe she was just doing the best she could with the cards that she was dealt in that time. And, you know, what I didn't realize at the time and what I realized today is that, you know, I was still a trapped 12-year-old little girl for a really long time, and I wasn't 12 years old anymore. And, you know, that first little piece of the puzzle was a crack, and a little bit of light was able to shine in. And I can tell you that, I don't know, for me, right, when I get the stuff starts to come up, you know, all of the feelings and the emotions and all of the things, I want to stop, push it back down. Like, I don't want you to see, I don't want you to have to like deal with me. Am I crazy right now? Like, I don't have time to be emotional. I don't have time for this. Like, you know, I'm sick. Like, I'm, you know, I'm pushing all that back down. And at the same time, I'm holding you at a distance, right? And so for me, when those emotions come up today, I've learned like, it's okay to completely let that uncrack because my body's trying to release it. Right. And if I can just sit with it long enough, you know, that can come out and I can be free of that. So for me in this particular, piece in this reading here, you know, asking God to help show the same tolerance, right, that I would, you know, think of a sick friend. Sometimes that can be really hard because people are assholes, but good, you're still paying attention. Sometimes that can be hard, right? Because, and a lot of times this is for me, right? A lot of times when you irritate something that you do that irritates me, it's really because I do it too. And it's something that I don't like about myself. And I might not necessarily know it quite yet. Or maybe I do know it and I just like haven't worked on it yet fully. That's a lot of my stuff today, right? Is this like, that's really what it is, right? It's like, I know I got to work on this. I've been balking on it forever. And now that's your behavior. And I can't stand that in you because I don't want to work on it in me, right? Like the problem is that if I don't continue to work on me and to be aware of the things that tick me or trigger me or whatever the case may be, I might not be able to show up for you in the way that God needs me to, because I'm got the selfish, self-seeking all up in my head and everything's all about me. Right. And so I destroy my chance of being helpful. And it's funny, I was sharing about, this before the meeting. And you know, Saturday night there was a speaker, and, we ended up being on the same deployment together in 2019. And, he shared that he sat on that ship the entire time and had gone to the AA meetings on the ship, but they were not really AA meetings. They, you know, nobody really from AA was there. It was just a bunch of sailors bitching and complaining about X, Y, and Z. And I felt awful because I'm an AA on that ship and I didn't show up, and I have the experience, and that would have been my responsibility. And, you know, I was being selfish. And it didn't even think to me at the time to, and register like, hey, maybe you should show up because it's not all about you. Right. And I wasn't able to see that at the time. And luckily God did for him, and still got him into the rooms. But who knows, maybe there was other people that didn't make it. And so anyways, that was for me, like, if I'm in my selfish, self-seeking ways, because I'm not constantly growing and I'm not constantly, you know, thinking about or looking at people like, okay, this is, you know, this situation is like, how can I be helpful? You know, I sometimes forget that, like, everyone has a story, and my story isn't the only storyline, right? As much as I like to think that it is, you know, and so I can get caught up in that. This list, you know, that we make when we do a four step, at least for me, that's where I find my patterns, right? And I can tell you that repeating patterns, I don't know about anybody else, but for me, repeating patterns is like the bane of my existence. And I'm so aware that, like, I can see the pattern repeating itself, walking to me all the way across the room. And I know that I haven't worked on it, and I see it. I'm like, here comes this pattern again. And I'm like, ready. And like, no matter what I do, it gets to me. And then I'm on the other side of the pattern because I didn't do the work, because I rested on my laurels, because I didn't do a 10 and 11, because I didn't do a four step. The pattern, I'm on the other side of the pattern. I'm like, oh, damn. Okay. And like, I'm going to tell you, I want to say that, like, you know, the patterns for me are always like the biggest things that I know they're going to continue if I don't do the work to figure out the causes and conditions, which is figured out by doing a four step. And so it really does hold the key to the future. So I can see these patterns, so I can maybe stop doing them, or at least stop participating, or at least being like, I see you, pattern. You can stay over there in that little hole. Don't come over here. You know, at least I can see them today, right? And so anyways, being able to see those patterns, being able to, you know, look at people with compassion and tolerance, and like being like, maybe I don't have this whole, you know, maybe even saying something as simple as like, are you okay? Like, maybe they're flipping out. Maybe they're cussing me out, taking a step back to be like, maybe this isn't about me. Right. Cause how many times have I done that? Especially driving down the road, right? Like, how many times have I done that? And it has nothing to do with the other person. A lot. I do it a lot, just in case you're wondering. Cause I am definitely not perfect. So, and I'm not perfect. And, I like what Morgan said about, like, you know, we'll just keep trying and failing. And then the next time we come around that circle, maybe it'll be a little bit better. You know, I've done that enough on the carousel of patterns.
Yeah.
So that's what I got on that.
Thank you. Damn. All right.
Sorry.
Well, no, you're fine. I just, it's been a quick hour. I'll try to be quick here. Yeah. So we turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We realized that people who wrong us were perhaps spiritually sick. And I'm going to just kind of formulate this in a little bit here with, you know, my recent experience, putting a little bit of pen to paper. You know, like, my dad always comes up, and that's, you know, we sit 5 feet from each other at work, And it's all these little things, like I said earlier, it's almost, he always says he thinks he's going to die or has some sort of big anxiety issue all of the time going on. Truth of the matter is that dude is 81 years old and he's suffering mm-hmm. like in his own skin, really, because he knows, you know, realistically, there really isn't a lot of time left, you know, and I tend to not be able to see that. I tend to just think, okay, shut up. It's fine. You're good. You're good. We'll keep going on and go about our merry day. It's hard for me to flip this script. You know, I really do need to put pen to paper sometimes to be able to look at it from this angle. You know, I tend to, you know, and I even have it down here. I tend to not be able to let people be who they are, you know, and really the fact of the matter is, like, after doing this last little inventory, I've tried to put a little bit more effort into seeing how he's doing. You know, I talk to him on the phone and stuff like that and let him, you know, tell me everything that's going on, but I wasn't really paying attention, you know, and I've tried to turn that around and kind of formulate it in this way. You know, how can I be helpful? You know, if I was in his position, wouldn't I want somebody to be able to talk to, somebody that's going to be compassionate, somebody that's going to be helpful to me if I'm suffering? You know, like, it's pretty easy when I flip the script to say, yeah, I would like to have all of that too. Who am I to not give that to him? I mean, and it sounds like, you know, like I'm such a shitty son for thinking this, but this is just the reality of being an alcoholic in my skin. You know, like, I can't help the way that I wake up and react to life on a daily basis. I can come here and I can try to do this work to the best of my ability, and I seem to be a way better person when I do. And that's really what matters. So we'll pop down a little bit. I know we didn't read the last part. Oh, well, we've got 7 minutes. I was just going to share.
I'm going to read this last thing really fast, and then y'all each have like 60 seconds to tie it up. Can you do it?
Yeah, well, yeah,
we can. Page 67, referring to our list again. Putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. 60 seconds, Ashton.
I really struggled with certain resentments, trying to look at my part in certain situations where I really feel like there is absolutely no reason why I should have been in that situation. No person should ever have to go through certain of those things. And, you know, at the end of the day, the way that I had to look at it like this, right? The way that I drank, I put myself in that situation to be harmed. Doesn't mean I deserved what happened to me, but I put myself in that situation because the way that I drank. And that is how I had to look at some of the really hard stuff, where I was really struggling with, trying to see my fault in things that, like, I didn't think were my fault. And so, you know, I say that to say, like, at the end of the day, I always have a part. Accountability. That's one of my favorite words. Accountability. I have to be accountable for myself at the end of the day, no matter what, because nobody else is going to take care of me. So,
yeah. Where were we to blame that ever elusive fourth column? You know, a lot of mine, it's, you know, it was really hard to look at for the first time, totally putting out, you know, all of these ways that I felt that I was wronged. But, you know, it was, every single time. It seems to be that these things end up being what I'm really looking at in the seventh step, these character defects, if you will, are what's coming up in that fourth column. You know, that tends to be the way that I react to situations in my daily life, react to the way that I feel people are harming me. You know what I mean? A lot of time is made up in my own head. You know, I'm going to just go back. I even have like a little prayer here. Allow me to let people be who they are. Because usually, like Ashton touched on, a lot of times when I'm burnt up, it's not really what the other person did as much. It's about the way that I'm reacting to it. And this helps me see all of that. So thanks.
All right. We're going to pass the baskets in accordance with the seventh tradition, which states every group ought to be self-supporting. I've lost the format. I don't know what happened. That's all I've got. Are there any AA related announcements? The thing
is. I love it.
I have an announcement. Simple Actions has taken its show on the road. Every Friday this month, a home group member will be speaking at the Glebe something, something, something church in Suffolk, Virginia.
Into action.
Any other announcements? I really can't find the thing. Just don't know what to say. Sponsorship is yours for the asking. Do not delay. We urge you, do not delay. Newcomers, if you are too nervous to ask somebody to sponsor you, or you are too nervous to ask for a book, if you're too nervous to do anything at all, you can email us at info@simpleactions.net. Someone will get back to you. Someone will help you. That is why we are here. Don't know what else to say.
Here you go.
Meeting after the meeting. We will get together down Colonial Avenue at Cafe Stella for the meeting after the meeting. All are invited and welcome to join us. Please come. I'd like to thank the panel one more time. Please give another round to Ashton and Morgan. We'll get a chance to come up here and give them a hug and thank them for their service afterwards. And we read page 164.
Sure, I found the format for you.
Oh, thank you.
But you did it right.
Okay.
All right, I'm Morgan, I'm an alcoholic. Morgan. This is a vision for you from Big Book page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation, which you can do each day for the man who is. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and joy. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you. And also, one thing I wanted to say, don't burn your fourth step. That's dumb. You need it for your list.
We still have all six of mine.
Me too.
Good job. Yeah.
Don't publish it.
Don't burn your.
Bring it in. Our Father. Who art in heaven. Hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our trespasses. As we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation. But deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom. The power and the glory. Forever.
Keep coming back.
Good job.
Thank you for that. That was excellent. Good, BJ. Love you.
Ali, love you too. Where's your dog?